Jai Ma. So, we are taking these last five volumes of the Mother. We know that earlier collected works was till volume 15. Then later on, from the different disciples, as they passed away, their letters were found. So these are more like small, small letters. And I was told once that everything that is there in the first 15 volumes. But it's not exactly like that, because it has a different flavor. When you see the mother is writing to whom, and sometimes those one-liners catch you so much, they are worth putting, inscribing and practicing. For example, now we'll start with it. It has few letters, series of letters, but two of them are very interesting. So, one of them is to Rabindraji, who used to give work. So, that's very... to see the journey and how he has really gone where he reached. And the second is to Taradi, some of the letters to Taradi are there in this volume. Of course, it doesn't exhaust all the letters that she would have written, because obviously there are very few. But they give enough idea of something about her working. So one of them was written to a 13-year-old boy. So we know that it was, there were only three young children who were admitted to the ashram. One of them was Shanti Doshi. So this is to Shanti Doshi. So he came as a young child. His father came here. Then the boy wanted to come. And finally the mother admitted him. So 13-year-old, this is an exception. Normally she would not take anyone at that age. So his questions were also like a child, and but mother's answer coming to that level. One of the things is that, you know, one should never be afraid to share anything with the divine. One thing which comes very clearly. For example, once he was eating betel, so he told the person who gave the betel to him, ki, no, no, I have to go for pranam to the mother. And the person advised, okay, then you just, you eat it, after that you wash your mouth and go. Mother had no issue with the eating of betel as much as with the hypocrisy. That, you know, to appear like a sadhu bacha. And you can see those small little things, those little quarrels, and how sweetly she is explaining and taking them. So, and then he asks all about all the animals, what do they represent, and she is telling them what do they represent. So all plenty of letters, but we'll just read just some of them. More for the flavor, and some of them, as I said, even one-liners are very beautiful. So, at one place, he writes, I shall oppose the vital, I shall fight with it, I shall win the victory. One day I shall win the victory over all the dark forces. The divine grace is there. Why should I fear? Imagine 14, 15-year-old child writing this. And the mother says, yes, you should not fear. You should keep an entire faith in the divine grace. The thing that mother always, always says, the greatest impurity is fear. Everything else is still repairable, but fear is the greatest impurity, fear of any kind, because fear leads to shrinking, fear leads to closing us to the divine grace, it leads to hypocrisy, hiding things. She says the second point is to keep your body well balanced by getting enough sleep. 7 hours out of 24 and enough food. This comes several places, even in Sri Aurobindo's letter, 7 hours of sleep. And she says the hours before midnight are best. So generally, if you look at her advice, it's generally 10 to 5 is very good time. And the beauty is, if we really study the cycle, biological clock, then by 9:30, 10, the sleep hormones become active and the waking hormones go down. By 10:30, the sleep hormones are quite in the ascendance. And then again, the rising begins around 4:30, 5 o'clock. So this is a time which completely coincides with the biological clock. So 7 hours, 10 to 5 is a very good time to sleep. And it's excellent. And also food, there should be a balance. Okay. Second is, we have a tendency when we wake up, we try to linger in the bed. So, it's a common tendency that theek hai, it's okay, you see the time and then you try to alas se jisko bolte hai, laziness, which brings tamas actually in the system. It's known actually, it brings tamas. So, there is a letter, at night I sleep well only after 11. I get up at 5:30, but I wake up at 4 or 4:30. So, he is waking up early, but he is lingering till 5:30. And this is an experience that one can have, that, you know, if your eyes are open, if you feel awake, get up. It's much better. Next day, the cycle will adjust itself. So, she says, it is not good to lie in bed when you are awake. It is more tiring than restful. And it also increases tamas. It is better to jump out of bed as soon as you wake up. Then in the evening you will feel sleepy and can go to sleep earlier. So that's the whole idea. That you will wake up and then in the evening very naturally you will sleep. The hours of sleep before midnight are the best and most restful. So this is the second very simple take home point. Then there is another letter. Obviously, youngster, adolescent, I have faith in my strength and believe I am capable of doing all the work. Mother reminds him, it is not in your own strength that you should have faith. That's okay. It is the divine force which works in all who are consecrated to the divine and sustains them in their action. I repeat, having faith in yourself cannot take you very far. And it is certain that sooner or later you will feel a reaction and be obliged to stop. So all fatigue and all is a sign that somewhere I am reaching my own limits. First, establish the true attitude, which is to find your base, your support and your help in the divine alone. Then all possibility of fatigue will disappear. Until then, it is better to let the servant do at least part of the work which you can supervise if you like. Meditation, one liner, very powerful. How should I meditate? Fix your mind on the aspiration and dismiss everything else. It's simple, beautiful and... Will you please explain to me why I felt a trembling when Zed was displeased? So this is an experience everyone has. People throw a lot of vital vibrations which are not healthy. And if you are in close proximity, you catch them. And the trick is to learn to cut them off. I had a very strange experience about it. Because in clinical practice, you can't avoid. There are people who come with all kinds of things. So there was a particular patient and every time after she would go, I would feel as if my whole energies are drained. After some time, I used to experience from the hands and from the feet, energy is going. So I would come and I would just lie down in my house and for some time and then I could do whatever I had to do. So but when you are with the person, what would you do? Because person is sitting there and you are in a counseling session, so-called counseling session. So one day it happened spontaneously. I had a picture of the mother on my desk. I'm just sharing it. Later on I came to know something very interesting about it. So I was looking at her thinking, okay, now this process will start. And then I just playing with the photograph, probably instinctively my hands worked in such a way that the picture was turned towards this lady. And I actually felt that whole thing got cut off as if there is a wall between me and the person. It was just a small little picture which I had turned. So I said, this is wonderful because I can do this always and it worked always. Then I came to know from Pradeep Bhai here that, well, Navjat ji had once asked the mother and she said, put me in between yourself and the person whomsoever you are speaking. And it's such a wonderful thing that because you don't get it's a law of vibrations. So all these vibrations come and they affect us, influence us. So she says, vital movements, desire, anger, fright, etc., produce vibrations which spread through the atmosphere like waves of electricity and strike those who are open, sensitive or weak. Three conditions. It's so common that you go to a marketplace and you feel like buying something. Even if, so as a principle now, to long back, don't go to buy anything. But otherwise, as a principle, one of the things is don't carry your purse. Now, unfortunately, everything is on phone. You can't keep your phone at home. But basically, you get the, many people, I mean, I don't know, I have not experienced this, but the urge to buy simply because they have entered the market. They have gone with a friend, probably not thinking of anything, and the urge to buy comes. So these are small little wonderful things she says. And then there is another. Okay. I don't understand why. They are two very interesting small letters. Just after so much happiness, so much disturbance comes. This is not the first time it has happened. These are universal things people go through. So it's very interesting how she says. She says the movements of consciousness are like a pendulum. The more it swings in one direction, the more it swings back in the opposite direction. This is the whole play of dualities. It's only if you are rooted in the divine that you can arrive at a stable basis. So, he asks, by what science can one tell that the psychic being has come to the surface? Because this is what we are told, that psychic being, discover it, it should come to the surface. How will we know? Will we have some vision? Will we hear some voice? Will somebody tell us, look here, now your psychic being is on the surface. So, here she gives a achuk marker. The achuk certain marker is one feels peaceful and happy, full of trust, full of a deep and true benevolence, and very close to the divine presence. So psychic being in the forefront means you feel close to the divine presence, you're peaceful, happy, you have that spontaneous trust and faith, you have a benevolent attitude, meaning thereby at one place she even explains compassion. In very similar terms. So what does compassion mean? She says, compassion is a pity full of strength and kindness, a pity that pardons and make amends, forges, forgets all offenses, and wants always what is best for everyone. So this psychic opens the doors to this compassion. Here is something very interesting I thought I'll share. So she's asked, it is said that Krishna, Buddha and Jesus Christ were avatars. So when these people yourself, I mean, this is a, of course, as a question, it is rather silly. Everything is the Divine Mother, it's a different thing. So she says, Krishna was an avatar. The Buddha and Christ were only emanations. One place where the mother categorically speaks of this, Krishna Vadanavata. If you read the Dashavatar sequence, you will not find Christ and Buddha. So, obviously, in Sri Aurobindo's essays on the Gita, there is a list. He mentions it in the flow that these are the avatars where he speaks of Buddha and Christ. And even in Sri Ramakrishna Ashram, you will see that. So, that's because it's a sequence in which they fit. But whether they were conscious avatars or not, this is not clear. Neither Sri Aurobindo confirms that, nobody else. But Mother confirms Krishna was an avatar, but Buddha and Christ were emanations. The difference is avatar is a very conscious descent of the divine. And emanations is something which projects into, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. No, Vibhuti is different. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for instance, is regarded as an Ansh avatar of Krishna. So it is, and the story goes behind that Krishna and Radha have a conversation, and then Shri Krishna, then he says, okay, this time you take the lead. So something of their combined presence emanates. Emanates is something which emerges from within and then takes a form. But avatar is the divine being taking a conscious birth. So there is a different thing. Difference between the two. Vibhutis belongs to nature. So vibhutis are those with extraordinary something in nature which is used by the divine for his work and his purposes. So that's refers to the nature and not to the psychic being or the soul essence. So these are all letters, as I said, to again, all of them are lovely, but we're just sampling here and there. So often people ask that we are not living in the ashram, we are far away. So disciple means living in the ashram. I remember once one person with whom I was traveling, we met together on the airport. Then he made a strange remark, and he said it under an authority, so I didn't tell him anything that time. So he asked a very, very senior disciple who was with Sri Aurobindo that, I want to practice this yoga, should I do it in the ashram or go outside? And that person said, no, if you want to do the yoga, you should be in the ashram. And he found it very logical. So I said, well, I don't contradict the authority, but this is not what Mother and Sri Aurobindo have said, because there are a number of disciples who are outside. And here is a letter of the mother also. Both of them have confirmed this. In fact, Sri Aurobindo has said there are more disciples outside than in the ashram. Those who are called to the ashram is a different kind of purpose and work. I mean, they are also doing the sadhana, and it's a great intensity. And it's, of course, a great possibility also. But to believe that only people in the ashram are disciples and not those who are outside is an error. So she says, being a disciple does not necessarily imply that one lives in the ashram. And mother confirms this. In fact, there are more disciples living outside the ashram than in it. So what about living in the ashram? What does it mean? She says, several conditions are needed to live in the ashram. And what she is going to say, when I had come and joined the medical department, it was something which came to me as a, not shocker, but it was very interesting, because there is a medical exam which is very thorough. Every year we have medicals in ashram department. There is so much stress on physical education. Ordinarily you will say, what is there in it? I mean, it's okay. I mean, body has to be regarded as, I mean, goes to what extent that it's something made of bones and all kinds of things, filthy things. In fact, in certain meditations, it's advised to meditate on the body like this. But not this. This a body has to be treated as a temple of the divine, eventually to be transformed. The whole approach is very different. And because of the intense pressure in the ashram, you have to be much more fit and stronger. Otherwise, they may be even break down. So she says, several conditions are needed to live in the ashram. First thing is, there are more disciples living outside. So what conditions are needed to live in the ashram? Should I have read Mahabharata, Ramayana, Vedas, Purana, Upanishads? She's not saying any of these things. She's saying, one of which is that one's health should be good enough to allow one to conform to the ashram discipline, which does not provide any special arrangements for food, services and so on. It's a different life. Many people ask me, so I say, see, 100 difficulties and defects apart, but the fact that you join the ashram means two major planks of life because of which people work are taken away. Nobody is paid a penny. Okay? I said, and there is no promotion. Like, you know, at the most you may become maybe head of department and then you realize nobody listens to you. I said, these two things for which human beings work outside, they are not there at all. So then the moment you join, ambition goes, money goes, now you work. So after that, how much you will advance is a different thing altogether. It depends on your sincerity. But at least you're already starting at a very nice level. And then she says that health should be good. Those arrangements can be made for a limited period for visitors. But for various reasons, it is impossible to make them permanent. So when you are ready to return, let us know 3 or 4 months in advance so that we can see whether any practical arrangements can be made. This disciple used to come and go and obviously feels bad. And then she would say, you must leave with your heart full of peace and your mind full of hope. You must leave with the assurance that our help and our force are going with you and that our blessings are with you and will always be with you. Of course, eventually he came back and lived forever. As we know, the mother was not in favor of too many medicines. And she says that, oh no, no drugs. The more drugs you take, the more you undermine your body's natural resistance. This is something which modern medicine is refusing to see, even though it has come up. The more medicines came in the market, the more hospitals came, the more new diseases came. And it's something which is striking the eye. But now so much money is involved. And this is a disease which spreads. Even, I mean, here sometimes, no, we should have more sophisticated. And how much ever you may say that Shubhinda was not in favor of big hospitals and too many hospitals, there should be something we should just support your recovery process, healing process. Even the ashram nursing home was meant for that. She has her own signature. Big board is there. Finally, it is only faith that cures. And that place, everything was meant so that people can just be restful. And they are looked after and some basic medicine if required, and then they will recover. It was not meant to be a high-tech, you know, all kinds of things. Many doctors from outside, they just don't understand this. And therefore, we see all kinds of confusion that takes place. Okay, now comes this. This is our well-known Ravindraji. He was, names are not mentioned. But when you read the description from Gurukul Kangdi, who was here, who used to give work to everyone, so it's very evident that it's about Ravindraji. So he used to get an itch to go out, and even attracted by Gandhiji and all this, suddenly he would get a wave that I should do something outside for the country. All these thoughts used to come. And it's amazing how the mother would tackle with him. He used to go through his own, you know, moments when he would not go for pranam, not, you know, all that revolt and reactions. And it's amazing the kind of patience and love. So, once he, what used to happen was that originally the arrangement was, and I think now they are doing the same. In between, there was a process where people could join the department from the aside. So you join the department, the departmental head keeps you. And then after some time, suddenly your name goes to become an ashram inmate. As far as I know, this has changed. Now you have to go through the person who has to give you work, which is the right thing. So during Ravindraji also this process was happening. Suddenly he observed that they don't come to him. He was little, you know, Gurukul Kangri, little strict. So people would bypass, go to others and then get admitted. So he asked the mother, what is the point of my doing this work if you have allowed to see? Just imagine. So he asked that, have you withdrawn for me? And therefore he asked, I am tired of everything. It is quite a revolt, huh? Let me go if you find it impossible to change me. See, it's very interesting. And they are great sadhaks. And how they all went through this. So it's like gives you, people go through all kinds of things, okay? Let me have a very long and deep sleep. He's writing to mother. And then he says, don't withdraw yourself, mother. Because he thought mother has withdrawn. So she's letting people go through all kinds of people. But she had not told me. Okay, this is mine. If I have been of any use, even for a moment, don't let me down. This is how his mind is working. Okay, so this is 52. So mother says, there is no question and no possibility of letting you down. My attitude towards you has not changed. But your illness and your present condition have the same cause. I am trying to move quickly toward the future realization. The progress is rapid, and to remain close to me, one must move quickly also. Something in you was refusing to change, the same something that was boasting that it was not interested in yoga, that it believed only in work, etc., etc. You may do work 24 hours, but yoga is the basis. Work with that attitude of yoga. It's not an automatic process. As a result of it, you got out of my protection and fell ill. My word written at the beginning of the illness meant that, but it did not act as I hoped. Now there is only one thing to do. Face squarely the necessity of the change in some part of your nature and with my help, change with my love and blessings. And then she says, here she is referring to the ashram, for each work given, this is a thing for all of us, the full strength and grace are always given at the same time to do the work as it has to be done. All this revolt, reaction, it's the right attitude should be equanimity, surrender, aspiration, joy that, you know, she has given you some work to do. If you do not feel the strength and the grace, it proves that there is some mistake in your attitude. The faith is lacking, or you have fallen back on old tracks and old creeds, and thus you lose all receptivity. And then, of course, he would apologize also. Mother, I am sorry for my behavior yesterday. And then she would say, it's okay. See, benevolence. The disciple wrote that he felt the mother's presence only while working, and therefore work was his only sadhana. The mother replied, in the integral yoga, there is no distinction between the sadhana and the outward life. It is in each and every movement of the daily life that the truth must be found and practiced. Holidays, she tells the origin that the originally holy days, so holidays was in the Jewish and then later on adopted in Christian tradition, God worked for 6 days and then he took rest for one day and asked the people to contemplate and concentrate. This was the origin. He said, if you take it like that, it's okay that you use that day for concentration and contemplation. But it is not a day when you are, you know, you just allow laziness and enjoy. Then you do undo a lot. So she says, but creatures during 6 days work in for their personal interest and egoistic motives, And the seventh, they stop working to take rest and have time to look inwardly or upwardly in contemplation of the source and origin of their existence. This was the original thing. It is scarcely necessary to mention the modern manner of understanding the word or the thing. That is to say, all the possible ways of wasting time in a futile attempt at amusing oneself. This is how Sundays are used today. But beauty is, she just revealing us truth. She's not saying do this or don't do this. She has free choice. The mother doesn't impose, but when asked, she reveals what is the right thing, the right attitude. Then he once got very angry and bitter. So, mother replies, "My dear child, must I take it for bad temper and that the ego has been brushed the wrong way? You're not saying you're a sadhak. So many years you have spent here. Is this how you behave? This is 1962, okay? So you can imagine the number of years that have passed. You seem very bitter. And yet, nothing is decided without referring matters and telling that you must be consulted for the most useful thing to be done. But never mind. If you think things are not going the right way and I am responsible, let it be. I accept the responsibility." When I read it, it was so touching. She could have said, "I know what I am doing." She says, "If you think I am responsible for all that you are experiencing, never mind. Let it be. I am accepting the responsibility." What a divine humility and benevolence. Times are hard for everybody and in everything. But it is surely to teach us overcome our limitations. And she is closing this letter by saying, "I have full confidence in you. Count upon you. Need your work and feel sure you will get over the present difficulties." Then comes the famous, because of these complexities of life here. Because transformation is an extremely difficult process. Anybody who is even cross the ABC knows this. Because as Maheshwariji used to say, what the divine does, you have an old dress which is stitched for you. So you're not doing rafu work. Mother used to say, it's not a place where you just do a little bit of rafu. So he opens. Then he redoes where necessary a new cloth entirely. It's a process where you are laid bare. Many things we hide inside, comfortable with it, live with it, express it in our own way. They all are unearthed. So it's not easy. So she says, a good advice to all the ashramites. In their dealings with visitors and foreigners and even among themselves. When you have nothing pleasant to say about something or somebody, keep silent. What a wonderful thing. Don't, I use my own understanding in this, that don't advertise your ignorance. Because when you say about others, you are assuming the position of being the judge who knows. So ignorance is okay, but don't at least advertise it. That you know about people. So when the disciple became editor of Purodha, he began writing stories and articles for the journal. But as he explained to the mother, he was afraid that his head would get swollen of his old ambition of becoming a great writer rose up again. So he's writing his stories and publishing it. So now he is worried. He wanted to become a writer. Will it surface? So the mother's advice, so beautiful. She's not saying don't do this because yes, you may become ambitious. No. She's saying behind all ambitions, there is a truth waiting the opportune time to manifest. Now that the ambition is gone, it is time for the truth, the capacities and abilities to manifest. Take care, take great care not to become sullen, but I am with you, helping you in order to do something that may be interesting. With love and blessings. This is a very touching, interesting letter about Mother, I would very much like to see you in your new body. Here she gives a hint of what she was doing. This is 63. And the mother hints at two possibilities and two processes. It is discussed at great detail in the agenda later on, that she could build a new body and just switch into it. But why she doesn't do it? Because several times this discussion comes. Switching into a new body, switching into a new body. And she knew that whole process. She could build a body for other beings. As I was mentioning that, even I have had experience of someone. She could build a body and just it looked like a very earthly body. It had its difficulties and issues, but as she says, it was very possible. So, why she was not doing? Just later on, she did that. That's my own understanding. As much as possible, the cells could be transformed and then she switched on. Now, this I am saying based on, my intuition, but there is a letter which supports this whole thing. So, he says, Mother, I would very much like to see you in your new body. 25th January 1963. The supramental yoga of the physical actually started in 61, in the real earnest, yoga of the cells. And that's when after 1961, Durga Puja, she withdrew. This is on page 219. Because I am skipping many pages, therefore I am. So, after Durga Puja of 1961, the mother did not come down. There was no more darshan and she withdrew completely. And 62, there was a major, change of the heart as an organ, all this she has described. So then, 63, he's asking her. So mother says, I suppose you mean my new appearance or my transformed body. Because for a new body, I do not know of anybody who could make a complete living body within, which I could step without losing, at least partly, my present consciousness. This, of course, could be a relatively quicker process. This is possible. She knew the whole thing. But, now this is very touching, but not quite fair for the cells of this body. So full of enthusiasm and lending themselves so willingly to the somewhat exacting process of transformation. And she would describe this in great detail through the agenda, how she would take up a group of cells, and then she would transform, then keep it with the new body, then put them back here, and then the functioning. She describes in great detail. And why say this is the process, and at the end, she finally, whatever, totally refused. That was left and she stepped into it because the mother's body after the physical withdrawal. See, in all images of the mother, you'll see her tall. But when she had physically withdrawn, the body was quite shrunk. Not after days, almost immediately. One could see that. So this is where the whole process, she gives a hint. Here there is only a hint. 10 more years will elapse. But that is because he drew the light which went into the inconscient. That's why the light was there. Mother didn't need to do it. She had completed the work till it could be and then switched on to the new body. And that is why quite a few experiences, one of them is Nalini Da in 1974. This is there, a vision in Collected Works, Volume 6, and there is another book, The Mother Abides, in which he describes in 1974, he sees the mother in a new transformed body and she says, I'm here, just as before. available for you, just as before. You can ask me everything, nothing has changed. But problem is that our vision is limited. This is the main problem and difficulty. And that's the whole subject matter. Okay. So then, as always, people feel miserable everywhere, even when they are right next to the divine. So she says, people are here to change their consciousness. Unless they become, all of them, true to their aim, nothing true can be done. People who feel miserable and find that they have not the comfort they require ought not to stay, very simply. We are not in a position to do more than we do, and after all, our aim is not to give to people a comfortable life, but to prepare them for a divine life, which is quite a different affair. And I must add that still so much comfort here compared to any other ashrams that I know. I have been to quite a few and know. Quite, people are living in royal comfort outside. I mean, here still. I mean, you have at least a room to yourself and you have a fan. And then, of course, a washroom. So she says that, well, that's not the... Then, of course, this declaration we have read and you look at superficially and then whom are we fighting? We do not fight against any creed, any religion. We do not fight against any form of government. We do not fight against any social class. We do not fight against any nation or civilization. We are fighting division, unconsciousness, ignorance, inertia, and falsehood. We are endeavoring to establish upon earth union, knowledge, consciousness, truth. And we fight whatever opposes the advent of this new creation of light, peace, truth and love. Then she speaks of Kali, which is behind all the destructions. Okay. Kashmir. Now 370 is gone. After so many years. And we can see now split of Pakistan in five parts, which mother told long back. We will never know the forces that worked behind. But here is a question that he has asked. I hope that the trouble in Kashmir is the first step towards the unity of India and Pakistan. 65. The mother says the supreme wisdom is seeing to it. Of one thing we must be convinced. All that happens is exactly what must happen in order to lead us and the world as quick as possible to the goal. The union with the divine and ultimately the manifestation of the divine. I think most people are now able to see that. Another very beautiful one-liner is something we should be put inside, outside, everywhere. Love is with all. Working for the progress of each one equally. But it triumphs in those who care for it. So true. A beautiful eye-opener. So again, 1967, he speaks of bitterness. But now he gives a different excuse. Mother, I am not bitter for the simple reason that I am losing my sense of responsibility. It is X who is getting more and more bitter, even against you. He feels that soon all of us, whom he calls people of the old lot, will be thrown out in a helpless condition. What kind of thoughts were going around? I was praying that I may not get the infection. He is feeling agitated a little. Things are much better, but still. So she says, all that happens is to teach us one and the same lesson. Unless we get rid of our ego, there is no peace, either for ourselves or for the others. And without ego, the life becomes such a wonderful marvel. This is a sweet letter. Mother, can you tell me why in Sri Aurobindo's ashram, in your presence, everyone seems to think of food, physical culture and the doctor for keeping good health? It's so true. People of all kinds. And this exactly, she's describing the reason, exactly that's what logic everybody applies. The divine help may take a fourth place if it likes. It is difficult at present for one to speak of your help. People seem to think that by speaking of your help, either one is trying to show off or is a fanatic. Mother says, Sri Aurobindo said that the physical was to be taken into the yoga and not rejected or neglected. And almost all here thought that they were doing yoga in the physical and fell the prey of the physical needs and desires. So true. Almost exclusive importance, some people. Oh, physical, physical, physical. And it goes to what extent? I mean, I have also seen this, people. You try to explain anything else. No, no, no. Body's importance. Mother has given so much importance to the body. So I just keep quiet. But still, she says, it's okay. Let people take care of the body if they think that is more important. To speak frankly, I like better that mistake than that of the so-called ascetics who are full of contempt, bad will and scornful feelings for the others. No time to say all that could be said on the subject. So she has said, each one has his own way of looking at it. But the reason is that then there is a question on Ramayana. Mother, just a question, if you care to answer it. The Ramayana says that when Rama saw that his work was on the earth was finished, he entered the river Saryu along with his companions. One should not judge an avatar's deeds, but this act looks like mass suicide. And suicide is regarded as the greatest sin. How to explain this? People do ask this question. Interestingly, Mother's reply is very powerful. She says, number one, for the Supreme there is no sin. Doing in a state of consciousness, where entering Saryu or like Sri Krishna, whole massacre of Kurukshetra, he does what he does based on the highest truth. Two, for the devotee there is no greater sin than to be far from the Lord. So, three, at the time when the Ramayana was conceived and written, the knowledge revealed by Sri Aurobindo that the earth will be transformed into a divine world and an abode of the Supreme was not known or accepted. So the avatar had to finish the work and go. If you consider these three points, you will understand the legend. Although it may be that the actual facts were not as they have been told, this also she says, what really took place may be very different from what we have heard. Okay. In just a few more letters. This is written to our Taradi. So, some of the letters are here. And she was asked, sweet mother, are you with us during the collective meditation in the playground? Because she is asking this in 1960, when mother would come sometime, she would not be there. Because from 59, after that, she went up. She would come down for the darshan and special darshans. But playground, she had, that's why you'll see the last talk in playground. 58, 59, that's the last talk. So 60, she asks, sir. She says, certainly, I am always there. To benefit from it, what should we meditate on and how? So the mother says, the method is always the same. Gather together the energies in you that are usually dispersed outside. Concentrate your consciousness within, beneath the surface agitation, and establish as far as possible a perfect quietness in your heart and head. Then formulate your aspiration, if you have one, and open yourself to receive the divine force from above. This is on page 355 of Collected Works of the Mother, volume 17, those who want to, because it's a practice that she has given. Page 355, series 5, Collected Works of the Mother, volume 17. I'll read it again. The method is always the same. Gather together the energies in you that are usually dispersed outside. Concentrate your consciousness within, beneath the surface agitation, and establish as far as possible a perfect quietness in your heart and head. Then formulate your aspiration, if you have one, and open yourself to receive the divine force from above. Receiving the divine force in several ways, people do it. Most of the difficulties that people have are due to a lack of control over their actions and their reactions to the actions of others. According to one's own nature and weaknesses, one must set for oneself a discipline that is invariably to be followed. For example, never to quarrel. Never to reply when someone says or does something unpleasant. Never to argue when one disagrees. Obviously, one should never lose one's temper when things or people are not the way one would like them to be. Naturally, if a person is not used to controlling himself, it takes a good deal of effort to acquire the habit. But this is quite indispensable if one wants to make any progress. The path is long. That is why one must have patience and an unfailing sincerity towards oneself. And now she says, the most favorite thing that human beings love. She says, this 1971, 3 years later, Taradi left. 2 years later, the mother left, withdrew physically. When one gives one's love to another human being, the first mistake one generally makes is to want to be loved by the other person. Not in his own way and according to his character, but in one's own way and to satisfy one's desires. The person may be loving, but we don't recognize it. We want it. That means the whole ego is at play. This is the number one cause of all human miseries, disappointments and suffering. She is giving us the number one sutra, most important for relationship. So what does love mean? To love means to give oneself without bargaining. Otherwise it is not love. Obviously it's bargaining, calculation, expectation, frustration. But this love. But this is rarely understood and even more rarely practiced, and the consequences are painful. And finally, when one loves the divine truly and totally, then one also loves his creation and his creatures. And naturally, among his creatures, there may be some that one feels closer to and loves more specially. So it's not just an impersonal universal love where everybody is same. No, there would be especially psychic relation because the soul has gone through many lifetimes, and in that process developed certain affinities, closeness, families of beings who have come for the same works. He says that is bound to happen. But then the love that one feels is not a selfish love of the ordinary humankind. These special relations are not based on what I am going to get, the benefits. It is no longer a love that wants to hold and possess, but a love that gives itself without asking anything in return. And that the highest form after which we can stop. To love for the joy of loving is the best condition for a happy, for a peaceful and happy life. I think this part, I mean, in that whole movie, I mean, I'm sorry to give a movie example, Devdas. In that film, there was one scene which made the whole thing worth it. When, I think his wife, official wife, she goes and asks Chandramukhi, where is he? He must be hiding somewhere. He said, oh, you want to search for him? Okay, find him. He is everywhere. That's the place where love, even human love, has the power to take. And so she says, to love for the joy of loving is the best condition for a peaceful and happy life. It amounts, in other words, to loving the divine in all things. Divine will give you much more than what you need. And even if it doesn't give, because the joy of giving to the divine, we can always have. If this culminates in wanting only what the divine wants, then there is perfect peace. So I think this is the perfect remedy. And this final thing, two little letters. The divine whom we seek is not far off and inaccessible. He is at the very heart of his creation. And what he wants us to do is to find him and, through personal transformation, to become capable of knowing him, uniting with him, and finally of manifesting him consciously. We must consecrate ourselves to this. It is the true reason for our existence. And our first step toward this sublime realization is the manifestation of the supramental consciousness. I am with you always. We are never alone. The divine is always with us. It is up to us to become conscious of his presence. I am with you always and will be with you throughout your journey to help you to find the divine. This letter is to her, but it's, I believe, what is the difference in that which has been published here? I take it that it becomes a universal something which, like a sutra which can apply to all, and which is so true. The only way to have lasting happiness is to find the divine. I expect to see you on your birthday. Pray for this grace, which is the true aim of your life. I ask only that you have faith and trust. I am putting myself into your heart so that you may always find me there. With love and blessings. It is an interesting coincidence, actually. I just realized just now, so I must share. Taradi's birthday is 5th July. And we are just 4 days and we are reading some of her correspondence with the mother.
90 years.
After a point you are ageless and deathless. Age is only of the body. Consciousness is universal and immortal. Jema.